Rahman Rahim. First of all, thank you so much to all of the organizers of this event. I know it took a tremendous effort to organize any community, especially in the middle of the day, and on such a beautiful day at that. And this is my first time speaking in Michigan, so jazakallah khair to all of the organizers who brought me here, as well as you, each of you who is here today. You know, this day is obviously commemorated in remembrance of the holy site of Al-Quds, and it's also very important for us to understand our obligation as Muslims, as an ummah, and also as people of conscience, that the end of oppression will only happen with the gathering of people of faith and people who have faith in things of higher substance. When Ayatollah Khomeini began Al-Quds Day and marked this day, you know, this Friday during Ramadan, as an important day for us to remember the struggle, the jihad of Muslims all over the world, he focused predominantly on Al-Quds for a reason. It is one of the most holy sites in all of Islam. It is our original Qibla. It is some place that, while under occupation, we, even as a free people living in a democratic country, who are given the appearance of every good thing, who supposedly have our hands extended towards anything that we desire, we will never be free until Al-Quds is free. This world will not be free until Al-Quds is free. And Al-Quds, of course, both as a site and as a symbol for the oppression of the Palestinian people, and therefore a large part of our ummah, to the Muslims who live in the surrounding Arab countries, who are oppressed by their Arab governments, and also to even the American Muslim population here in the United States. For whatever reason that we are here, we are still united as an ummah, and we must not forget that. As the brother mentioned, I have the privilege of leading two land convoys to Gaza, one in July of 2009 and one in December of 2009. On the first voyage, we took nearly 200 U.S. citizens, the largest delegation of humanitarian aid workers, to enter into Palestine, which was a joyful truth, but also a sad one. When we entered in, we were allowed for about 20 hours inside of Gaza. And yet every person who came out was changed forever. Having seen oppression with their own eyes, having witnessed the destruction that Israel has caused, not only in the massacre that they committed, the 22-day massacre in December of 2008 to January of 2009, but also in this ongoing insistence of a siege, a blockade on Gaza for the last 4 years. They say that it is a security interest, that items could be smuggled into Gaza, and therefore it is necessary for them to have a siege on Gaza. If that were true, which it's not, then why prevent the export of items from Gaza? Why prevent carnation farms, homemade items, honey, olives, anything that could be grown in Gaza, in Palestinian, rich Palestinian soil? Why not prevent the exports, or why prevent the exports of Palestinian items to the rest of the world? Because it is merely an effort to control the economy in Gaza, and as an effort to keep them in a complete chokehold and subjugation to the countries around them. And we had to deal firsthand with the Egyptian government, which seeks to remain blameless, but they have blood on their hands for the siege as well. When we entered in, as I said, people's lives were changed, and we came back promoting as much as we could around the country that everybody should go to Gaza. Anybody who could go should go to Gaza, and that we would continue to go, continue to challenge the siege, and continue to take in the most basic needed items, so they are merely a drop in the bucket for what is necessary for the Gazan people to survive on a daily basis. So we organized again, and on the second convoy, we took a far smaller amount of people. We took only 50 U.S. citizens, but we joined an international convoy of 500 volunteers. And with 250 vehicles, we traveled from London down through Europe, through the beloved country of Turkey, across Syria, down through Jordan, and we were going to enter into Egypt, and they said no. And they made us turn all the way back, and then with Turkey's support, we were able to fly into Al Arish, have our vessels shipped, our cars shipped on vessels into Al Arish, where we were then brutalized and attacked by the Egyptian government, who had given us a warm welcome and an invitation to go into Gaza. We were held there for a couple of days, and upon release and several injuries later, we were allowed into Gaza, and this time for a slightly longer duration, around 30 hours. And again, people's lives were changed. Again, experiences, first-hand experiences with the people who are there, who have such strong iman that none of us could even speak to them about anything. We sat there and we held their hands as fathers and mothers told us stories of massacre in their own homes. As fathers described finding parts of their children up on rooftops. We listened to those stories and we watched the women not crying, yet comforting us. And we watched the men say, Allahu Akbar. This is what is deemed for us. This is what is determined for us. We praise God for everything, and we will have more children. And we will continue this struggle. We will not leave. And we will not give up.
Takbir!
Allahu Akbar!
On the third opportunity to enter Gaza, I was at the flotilla, working with IHH, a tremendous organization that with very little resources and a lot of support from people just like yourselves, they have started a program in over 120 countries, feeding the poor, clothing the clotheless, taking care of orphans, starting up technology programs in countries and vocational programs in countries, feeding people during Ramadan, a tremendous, tremendous organization that I encourage everyone to look more closely at. I joined up with IHH as a volunteer and with several other comrades, we went on the flotilla. And in the same way that Khomeini spoke about the solidarity that is necessary for the Ummah, for there to be change and for there to be an end to oppression and occupation, we formed that small Ummah on the ship. In the few days that we were in transit, heading towards Gaza, I can't describe the amount of joy that we all had. We read together, we prayed together, we ate together, we slept together. And all of us dreamed of going to Gaza. And all for our own intentions, our own very specific intentions. Many were women with families that they had left behind in their mid-40s, who had never left their husbands, let alone left the country, let alone traveled to occupied territories. People from 50 countries all over the world joined together for this one effort. And the materials that we carried were ones that would not be allowed through Egyptian borders. Why? Because they are things that would actually stimulate the Gazan economy. If you look at the list of things that we're able to take versus things that we cannot take into Gaza, you see they will allow fish, but not fishing poles. They will allow clothes, but not fabric for clothes. They will allow food, but not seeds. And in that, you see the truth of what this chokehold, what this siege, this blockade is doing to the people of Gaza. And they make no short about it. They say we are trying to kill them, we are trying to choke them out. We'll give them just enough to survive, but not enough to thrive. Are we going to stand for that? Are we going to allow that to happen? Watch an entire population of people be wiped out, refugees themselves, more than 60% of them refugees. Are we going to watch them be wiped out in Gaza because of a siege, a political and economic siege?
No way! No!
Inshallah.
No way!
So we went on this flotilla and we challenged the siege. We didn't go through Egypt so that we would have to get their permission and play their game. We went directly to the source of the problem. And we challenged the international water barrier. Actually, I can say we attempted to challenge it. We were still 70 miles away from shore when we were attacked. We were attacked at Fajr, when they knew that most of the people on board would be praying. And many of the men didn't stop their prayers. MashaAllah, they continued to pray, knowing full well what our fate might be. The only orders we were given in terms of self-defense were to not allow Israel to board the ship. Do not allow the Israelis to board the ship. That's it. We weren't prepared. We hadn't planned a full-scale attack. We simply took their ladders and threw them down as they attempted to board the fourth deck, or we took their hooks that they were throwing over from the Zodiac rafts, and we threw them back into the water, not allowing them. So eventually they came with helicopters paid for by the United States government, Black Hawk helicopters, and they dropped commandos onto the fifth deck and onto the fourth deck. And even though they were few, and even though we put up a fight, they were overwhelmingly more powerful. Why? Because of their weaponry. 5 to 8 visible weapons on each person. And they were there to kill. There's no mistake about that. They shot from the Zodiac rafts prior to boarding the boats. Any of them. They didn't shoot paintball guns filled with paint like children play. They shot rubber-coated bullets for the first few minutes, and they switched to live ammunition, injuring brutally 60 individuals. Not one of them was injured because of a broken arm, or a blow, or a fist fight, combat. Every single property, the kidnapping of our ship and of our persons, the deportation into Israel first, then our imprisonment, the ridicule, the degradation that came with it, and then our deportation from Israel, as if we had wanted to go there in the first place. And when we got back to Turkey, all of us were stunned by the welcome. We had no idea. We had no idea that the rest of the world had been watching. Israel very strategically kept us there just long enough that they could influence the media, they could propagate their version of the story and of the attack into U.S. and worldwide media, so that we would be on the defense when we were released from prison. And what was that story? That we were the militants. That we were the ones who attacked them. It's comical. And it was interesting coming back to the United States. I was one of about 11 U.S. citizens that participated in the flotilla. There were 3 U.S. citizens that were on board the flotilla. One, of course, the brother who was shot 5 times and martyred on our flotilla. One, a woman who is a fantastic documentary artist from Brazil, but who lives in New York, who has put the most footage that we have on the website culturesofresistance.org, and then myself. And I stayed on board for most of it. I stayed on deck for most of the attack. Hello. Fairly windy today. So I was able to see everything. And I was so surprised when I got back to the United States that not many people, as many people as knew about the incident, not many people were doing anything about it. Until I saw communities like this one, communities, small communities in Chicago, in LA, in New York, in Washington, and then slowly over the course of the next few months, a rise in interest, in education, in information, one that has led to now the fundraising of nearly $200,000 for a U.S. boat to Gaza. Inshallah, this boat will set sail towards the end of September or in October, taking badly needed aid, but again with the primary purpose of calling this siege what it is: illegal, unjust, and unhumanitarian. We will challenge the siege by sea, and we will challenge it on 2 fronts by land, both with Viva Palestina on a land convoy and the Road to Hope, a strong group of mainly Muslim activists from the UK who are organizing a land convoy to Gaza as well. All 3 of them will converge upon Gaza, inshallah, at the same time, and Israel will be defenseless in their public media campaign trying to promote and support the idea of this siege. But what is necessary? For each person here today to assist in their prayers in the last few days of Ramadan, as we are fasting, to give our alms, to give our zakat to our communities, to the people within our communities who are oppressed, and also to remember our brothers and sisters overseas as well, in any place of oppression and subjugation. What we can do today is educate ourselves, remember what the purpose of today is, and remember that even though this is one day in many, it is an important one, and it is one that may change many lives. In the same way that our 1 week on the flotilla was basically like any day in the life of a Palestinian living in the occupied territories. Everything that we experienced, people in Palestine experience on a daily basis. We must not forget our brothers and sisters. And each of us, whether we have the opportunity to go and see it with our own eyes, or whether we have the opportunity to support it with our prayers, financially, politically, in any way that we can, we must do this. It is our obligation. People used to ask when I first became involved in the Palestinian struggle, "You're from Iran. Why do you care? You're not Palestinian." And over the course of the last few years, I've seen that this is not a Palestinian issue. This is an issue of humanity. It is one that we are all responsible for. And it is one that we all participate in, regardless of our background, our heritage, our culture, our religion, our beliefs, or even our political support. This is something that should be uniting us, not dividing us. And this is something that concerns us all again, because the oppression of one is the oppression of many. Until Palestine is free from its colonization and its occupation, and until other areas of oppression and occupation are free, then we will not all be free, regardless of what appearance of freedom we have. And we will not have peace until there is justice, and we will not have justice until there is truth. So I encourage all of you today to go learn more, talk more, speak with the people around you, learn about this issue, and then, armed with this knowledge and the faith and the hope that Palestine will be free, let us all go out and change the situation, change the world, even if just for the people around us, giving them the opportunity and the experience to know that oppression can be defeated because it is caused by humans. I thank you again all for being here today. I have no more to offer, but I would certainly answer any questions that anybody has after this event. I know that the events of the flotilla were confusing to many. The truth is out there. It is just buried under mounds and mounds of political Israeli Zionist propaganda. You know, so I encourage you to learn more about the situation. And I thank you so much for being here and for your participation thus far.